Mr. Mann, Reel 3. We're talking about the people in your unit, Mr. Mann. Was there any bullying that was going on inside the group?
Well, as a foreigner, on the odd occasion you would get it. I know if anybody had blackheads and that, they used to get hold of them and they used to put them on the table in the ward, as I'll call it, and the blackheads were squeezed out or scrubbed out or something like that. But I suppose not as a platoon, there wasn't really bullying, because if somebody started something, there was a few more of you to quell it. But there was the odd scrap occurred between them. There was two particular lads in particular. One was called Charlton and the other was called Davison. They were equally built, they were bigger built than me, not that I'm a big man, but they could never get on together. And I remember once in the dining room, or dining hall, and they started a scrap one day on the table, and it was a right go-to job. Anyhow, they both got sorted out, and went up before the company commander, and they ended up in the guard room for a few days apiece.
Was there any...
Watson that I was telling you about, another thing passed my mind, just before we went on the Monday, with a Saturday morning, not even on the Friday, Saturday morning, I went down, said I'd have a haircut, the parrot in Bondurant. So I went in, I said, give me a pretty short cut because we're going in the forcing on Monday. So I had my haircut and only coppers, and then Watson went through, he said, don't take so much off as what you've done mine, so really short. So then when we went in on the Monday, and we all had to go for haircuts more or less, I didn't force it because mine was short, and Watson had had his haircut on the Saturday. On the Tuesday, he had to go for another haircut, and they were free, so no point in us having a haircut on the Saturday. It was just a passing thought.
Was there anything like the initiation ceremonies that you hear about these days?
No, not the initiation. I know I've heard of it like and that, but definitely didn't happen in our platoon. No.
Gambling in the hut, in the barrack, did that take place?
There were. Cards has never been one of my strong points, so I didn't get involved in it. But I had a pal called Billy Punton from Newbiggin by the sea, and he would gamble. He was a pontoon was a favourite one, I think. And there's many a time like he'd say, can you lend me a bob, Jim, or something like that? And, put it on, and odd times he'd win, but more than often he'd lose. But I think there were maybe five or six out of the platoon who were really the gambling type. Yeah.
Was it against regulations, or did the army look upon it as in that way?
No, I don't ever remember them. I remember anybody being taken for the gambling and that. Same with beer drinking, I suppose, we're all really youngsters in the Young Soldiers Battalion, but we all thought we were men. And then you started off going for drinks of beer and that. Well, that was all right, provided you didn't come in drunk or something, or you were fit enough to go on parade the next day. Because often that happened, some of them weren't fit to go on parade the next day. So, they got on pretty well together, the lads. They're all helpful to one another. Same as outside, if there's any couple sort of got scrapping there, one from another unit and you, there'd always be a shout up the Durham's for hours. And then a few more would look in to time it could be a big dump, and they shouted, "Hey, the MPs are coming," and they're scattered, the red caps.
You mentioned equipment that you were inspected to have. If you lost any item of your equipment, what was the usual routine then?
Oh, you have to pay for it if you lost anything. I can't remember what the prices were now, but I mean, they can't be much. Not only that, but out of your wages, we'll say, which was 14 shilling a week. Or 7 shilling a week, I used to send home to my mother. And out of the other 7 shilling, would maybe get barrack room damages, or if there were any damages done there, or time the window pane would get broken, or something like that. and the PRI, which was like the social side of the army, they would knock coppers off and that, which was supposed to be used to give you a sweet after your meal, a so-called meal, anyhow. I think it used to be Lion's fruit cakes, a square-looking fruit cake.
Before we come to the food element, stealing, did that go on in the barrack room?
Oh, I see. They wouldn't put up with that. I must say, there's none in our platoon. If they did any stealing, they weren't caught, should we say. But if you knew someone was stealing, he used to get a bit of a rough time. Oh, yes. Especially if you knew it was him who'd taken something of yours, well, it didn't sort of start with just a talking. You used to be getting down to fisticuffs. Yeah. But then everybody would nearly black sheep him, you know, on one side. But no, I can't say there was much trouble there with him. See, not in that.
We haven't discussed the uniform. Did you get that straight away when you arrived?
Yes, within a couple of days, you know, the orderly only put in there, and then, as I say, you had your hair cut and this, that, and the dental treatment. Just watching again, he had to go for dental treatment. I had one tooth out when I went in, so I was all right in the teeth, touch, but Watson, he wants a grand, so he had to go and have this dental treatment, and it amounted to one of his double teeth there, the back was in a bad state, and it broke up as it was getting it extracted. It told me he ended up having the lever out the roots, and by God, he had a rough time with that. And there was your inoculations and vaccinations. Do the vaccination, you used to say, right, want to see a nice big scab on there in 2 or 3 days' time, whatever it was.
Any problems with your inoculations?
No. I'd never been vaccinated when I was young, so I was vaccinated in the forces. And inoculations, no trouble. Touch wood, I didn't pass out at all, though I still even today like the appearance of a needle. It's not the best of things, is it?
What were you inoculated and vaccinated against?
There was a TAV, a typhus. I think the main one was tetanus. What I don't remember, tetanus, typhus. I don't know if the TAV was tetanus or not. And then the vaccination, I think those were the main ones. Like in this country, you used to get other vaccination when you went abroad of getting it. But I think that was the main one, tetanus, TAV, and vaccination.
Did you get the following day off after having these needles?
when you had the vaccination, I remember, they said, right, is anybody feeling not fit for duties tomorrow? So there would be the odd one or two, put them up, you see, and then, right, you're not allowed out of camp tonight. So that was it. But with the vaccination, there was two or three of the lads that really did suffer, because in their arm where it had been put in, there was a cavity. So it was really a cavity, rough cavity. But there again, talking for myself again, I was very lucky. There was a small scab there, but they weren't deep. But others, they were like a boil inside out, as you might say. It was a terrible sight, some of them.
So you said you got your uniform over a couple of days. How was it issued, and what were you issued with?
Well, we went out to quartermaster stores, and then as you went in, they said, right, number. As for myself, I couldn't remember my army number. So I took my name, of course, as I did with some of the others as well. And for what I remember, there was sort of a longish counter, and the racks were up. And the quartermaster was stood there, and he would look at me and say, battle dress blouse, 40, size 40, hat, 7, 6 7/8. Or whatever size it might be, calling them out. So you get a uniform, and it was covered in this white DDT and the white powder stuff. Oh, it's stunk something rotten. So that your uniform, your vests, long john pants, short pants, khaki shirts. The shirts, you got three. As you did, if I remember right, with your pants and the vest, well, I think it was three of each. And a towel, which clearly more like tissue paper than a towel. You know, if you had a bath with it, it was like a wet mop that hardly dried yourself. Your issue with equipment as well, your webbing.
What comprised your webbing?
The first webbing that was issued was First World War, and that consisted of the five pouches for your rifle ammunition, three pouches, and then two pouches on top of them, and broad webbing, water bottle, the large pack for your back, and the small pack which was at the side, the gas kit, respirator, gas mask, your rifle, bayonet, ground sheet, blankets were already had, of course, because they were on the bed when we went.
Boots, of course.
Oh, boots, yeah, boots. And some nice thick socks, grey socks. And you got a housewife issued, which consisted of a bit of almost like calico. And in that, you used a razor, comb, lather brush, button stick, toothbrush, knife, fork, spoon. And the housewife, of course, which was a thimble with an open end on it. Both ends were open. And a needle, bits of wool, and a bit of cotton. Some people used them, some couldn't. But if you seem to say some of that, well, we used to try and down the socks up at times. Didn't make anybody weep. Mess tins, you were issued with.
What state were your boots in? Because these had to be very highly polished, didn't they?
Boots. They were really hard jobs, tough. We tried to use try and bend it. And leather laces, of course, laces for them. And they used to try and soften them by rubbing the leather between your fingers there. Finger and thumb of both hands, tried to work it to be a bit flexible. All gaiters you used to get, but the boots, then of course you had to get them highly polished. You had two pairs of boots this year. One you were supposed to dubbing for, say, mounted a battle order, exercises or general duties and that. And the other had to be highly polished, of course, for like some ceremonial duties when you're on guards, on guard duty or church parades and things like that. What it amounted to, you used to use your toothbrush and warm the leather over the toe caps and put plenty blacking on and rub it with the handle of your toothbrush. You would try and get it smooth and that, really smooth. And then eventually it got to where you were using spit and polish to bring them up. It was marvellous, really, to what polish you could get onto some of these toe caps with it. It was tedious sort of work, but then again, I suppose, in a way, they allocated a bit of time for you to do it, cleaning up.
Did you take to the boots okay? Were they comfortable for you?
At first, yeah, it's strange that, because for the first few weeks I didn't have any problem, and then I started with, I think it was my right foot, on the right hand side of it, it started with a bit of a rash, which anyhow I sort of soldiered on, as it were, with this and the thick socks. And there's one morning, I know, I was still rookie, of course, and my foot was really, really aching and that. And typical of the army, I stayed in bed, I didn't get up. I mean, Rivali used to come round, feet on the floor and all that. Rivali, this morning I was really in pain with his foot, so I stopped in bed. And it wasn't until actually the platoon officer and the sergeant come round and, oh, so I got a right bollock in there, what was I laying on bed for? Actually, I don't know how I got away with that laid on the bed. I would have to turn out before Benny else. This is how it happened. I was laid sort of in my bed or on my bed, and they came round inspecting the bed, you see, what the hell was I doing there? And all the rights of walking. So I said it was my foot. Well, they didn't run my foot. What are we doing yet? We operated yesterday, yes sir, and all that. They said, let's see your foot. So I showed this foot, and it was really raw right along the side of it. Anyhow, I think the note was struck then. So I said, oh, I should get this man up to the medical officer. And so he detailed one of the platoon to carry me up to the medical officer. I don't really know school acres, but there was sort of the buildings, and there's a row of terrace houses on top, 70 past thousand, and one of those was where the medical officer was. So he examined me, and he got some no comment past as to what it was or anything like that. And he said, I'll send you to a specialist. It was a bit embarrassing, this, mind you, because he sent me down to the Catrick Military Hospital, the specialist, as he said. Another two or three as well, they went. And we got to a section and we waited to see this medical officer there. And it was a ward, and it was a VD ward. I thought, oh, it stunk, the smell of it in this. And we just had to wait, and I know there was somewhere, I don't know, he was in another regiment there, like, and he'd abandoned the thing, I'd been with a woman, and he had actually got, I don't know whether it was stiffness or gone in here. And I thought, what the dickens was going on here? I couldn't believe it. At that time, I'd never been with a girl, I don't think, or anything, or nothing that could extra that. So I went to a call, like, man, private man, in to say the medical officer, and I went in, showed him his foot, and his comments were like, what the hell are you doing here? Was it just details sent there? He says, get out of this place. He says, get back to your unit. And he wrote a note, and I went back to the medical officer. And I think that medical officer went back to him because of the dunlight, didn't he? He must have been surprised, because obviously he thought he had a nail disease coming out on the foot. But what it amounted to, the treatment, was he kept me in this house, which is the medical centre, and treated it with the calamine lotion on lint. He used to put this on and they used to change it daily, and by God, when they took it off, the calamine and lint had stuck to this literally bare flesh there. Anyhow, that passed over, and after that, I never had any. Once I got pulled around, I never had any trouble with it. So.
You mentioned the fact that they looked at you and gave you a size, in effect, for your uniform. What happened if it didn't fit?
Well, you could more or less try it there straight away, and say it didn't fit or something. So the quartermaster, you know, he might come and say, oh, the hat's a bit small. He would maybe pull it down a bit. He said, nothing wrong with that. Oh, and he would change it at that time, because there was a forage cap, you see. Same with the tunics and that. And then after you finish your uniform, you would be on parade, and the regimental tailor, he would come round. And you know, I remember he used to look at the collar, because collars, they were all too big, the collars. And he used to put two marks, which way down, what it down here, or the other way down there, like. And then he used to take them, and then you put to your size. It's the only thing that I remember the most in was the battle dress blouse and the collar, because you didn't have a tie issue with that. Was later in the war that they assumed a shirt with a collar and tie. The shirts were issued with a grandad type khaki shirts, and by they were a bit rough as well. On gym shorts, you were issued with gym shorts, gym vest, and which was a singlet. And the gym shoes, which were just the white canvas strap type shoes, they were the issue as well.
Where did you keep all these items?
Apart from your large pack and small pack, you were issued with a kit bag, and you had to ram everything in the kit bag. Because the trouble was that was only really on a move or in barracks. But what was your best battle dress? Your trousers. You endeavoured to try and keep them hidden in the bed somewhere, because if you creased your trousers, you were looking a right mess. But the rest of it we just stuck into the kit bag. The kit inspection was amounted to the bed, and as with the three blankets, or four blankets if it was cold winter time, you see another blanket. Three blankets were folded, up to be folded so they were equal thickness, which was difficult because the blankets weren't all the same thickness, and then the fourth blanket, or third or fourth, whichever side you were, was wrapped around them. And then in front of that was laid out your kit, your mess, tins, your boots, and all the other bits and pieces. Socks have to be rolled up, and that the boots have to be laid on the bed, polished, of course. Oh, that was one thing as well. You have to polish one hand, boots highly polished, and the other one, which was dubbing, was for like field work, you could say. But there come a time when you have to send your boots in to be resoled. And if you're unfortunate enough to be picked for guard duty, then with a dubbing boot, of course you couldn't hardly polish it. So what you used to do then was borrow a pair of boots off one of the lads who wasn't on guard duty.
Was there a very high standard of turnout demanded of you?
Oh yes, there were the inspection, brass buckles and all that. There was no getting away just by polishing up the pieces facing you, or facing the inspection. That to be inside and round and all that, and we did it with like a brass, or you didn't have to get brass on the equipment. You were in trouble if you did. You had to blanco your equipment, and the brass of each bit had to be polished. Buttons on your great coat, the early battle dress blouses, uniform, of course, they were just the bone type button which came through, was on show and laid across.
How did you keep them, in a high state of creasing and cleanliness and so forth? Did you have an iron in the hut?
Yeah, the company stores, the company stores in Quartermaster, and of course you could get the iron from there. There were a charcoal iron. You used to put charcoal in and swing the iron round, to get it warmed up, and that. It wasn't electric iron. And that's how you used to iron your uniform. Especially if you're on guard duty, you used to have to get it all ironed up, both your trousers and your. But for the trousers, to try and keep the crease, and what we used to do is damp the inside of the crease and rub soap down, and then put it under your bed. And then that would get more or less creasy trousers in, so I'd get the crease in. But especially you used to go to the store, and then you had to sign for it, of course. You had the iron out, and you have to make sure you got it back there, or you'd end up being charged with. They did tell me that one occasion, the lads had been in Dunkirk, and if they came back to England and they hadn't got the rifles and that, they could pay for them. I don't know how that worked out. I think it sort of started off, but I don't think it went all the way through. Where any equipment that they'd left in Dunkirk, they were liable for it. They'd come back.
At what point did you get your rifle?
Oh, you were given that within the first week.
What was it they gave you?
It was a Ross, which was a First World War rifle again. It was a mixture really between two makes. There was the Ross, and then there was the Enfield. The Ross rifle had about 4 inches more of the barrel after the stock woodwork of the rifle sticking out, whereas the Enfield was more or less ended the length of the barrel was the same length as the end of the stock.
And what were they like as weapons?
They were heavy in one sense to go, but then again the platoon, you also got issued with a Bren gun, which was part of a platoon's weapon, but the rifles, they were, I suppose, pretty accurate in one way. We did go eventually onto the shooting range at Hurlworth. You used to have the big pull-up targets, and you used to have to fire at them. And the object was to get at least a 4-inch group of shots. I think we fired only about five shots in all. But the idea was to get them all in a 4-inch group. I think I had about two in, and the other three that were on the target, not in that group, went off. Well, they were pretty accurate, really. So then again, in a case of adjusting your sight to the distance, well, if you're not good at judging distance, you couldn't set your sights right, which you just amounted to the tip of the rifle was the foresight, and at the back of the rifle was an aperture or back sight, which was on a little slide, which folded down onto the rifle. You lifted up when you wanted to use the rifle, and this aperture you would slide up to markings on the slide, which conveyed the distance. And the thing was, the tip of the foresight in the centre of the target, in the centre of the aperture, and then the slot you were supposed to be dead on. You used to get a bit of a kick off it, of course, when you fired it. Not so much as you would off a Bose anti-tank rifle, which was, I don't know how long it would be, the barrel on that, 4-foot barrel or something like that, and the stuff. You all fired one. The thing was, you really had to pull it into your shoulder and really pull it back to your shoulder before you fired it, because if not, it would break the collarbone when you fired it. The hell of a kick on it. And different weapons as well, you tried out.
Can we just stay with the rifles for a few moments? Yeah. Did you have a Ross rifle personally?
Ross, yeah.
And yet you said there was a mixture of them. Did they use the same ammunition, the three and the...
Yeah, the same ammunition for the Ross and the Lee Enfield.
Did you like the Ross?
I preferred the Lee Enfield.
Were they replaced ultimately, the Ross rifles, with Lee Enfields?
I don't think so. I'm just trying to think when I went to the road. I think I still had the Ross one when we posted abroad. It seems to run in my mind when we first posted. But later on, I was issued with a Thompson submachine gun. I think that one later on in the world. But the Lee Enfield and Ross, the word I said, the early rifles.
When you got them, what state were they in? Were they greased or clean? How did you get them cleaned?
Well, you were issued with cleaning rag, which was used to call it a 4B2. It was also used for cleaning the barrel on the inside. So it was a case of, if you had a bit of old rag, I mean, an old rag was sort of difficult to get in one way, but you could clean it off. You'd no spirits or anything like that. And if it come, you'd be on the firing range, we'll say, which was all the same. When you come back off there, the rifle, you used to put a funnel in it and pour boiling water through it. And then use your pull through. On the pull through, there used to be three loops at the end of it. The first loop, you used to put a piece of gauze in, really scoop the barrel. The second loop, you used to put it into the 4x2. And the third loop was called the armourer's loop. And that was if the pull through stuck. When you were cleaning your rifle, he had to put his rod up, get it into the armourer's loop, and pull it back through.